Chapter 3. We're so desperately attached to each other. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh yes, I recollect, apostrophe said Ethelberta. And he had a sister, I think. I wonder where they went to live after the family collapse. Apostrophe, I do not know, apostrophe said Lady Peterwin, taking up another sheet of paper. I have a dim notion that the son, who had been brought up to no profession, became a teacher of music in some country town, music having always been his hobby. But the facts are not very distinct in my memory. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and she dipped her pen for another letter. Ethelberta, with a rather fallen countenance, then left her mother-in-law, and went where all ladies are supposed to go when they want to torment their minds in comfort, to her own room. Here she thoughtfully sat down a while, and some time later she rang for her maid. Menlove, apostrophe, she said, without looking towards a rustle and half a footstep that had just come in at the door, but leaning back in her chair and speaking towards the corner of the looking glass, will you go down and find out if any gentleman named Julian has been staying in this house? Get to know it, I mean, Menlove, not by directly inquiring. You have ways of getting to know things, have you not? If the devoted George were here now, he would help apostrophe, George was nothing to me, ma'am. Apostrophe, apostrophe, James then. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and I only had James for a week or 10 days. When I found he was a married man, I encouraged his addresses very little indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, if you had encouraged him heart and soul, you couldn't have fumed more at the loss of him. But please to go, and make that inquiry, will you, Menlove? Apostrophe, apostrophe, in a few minutes Ethelberta's woman was back again. A gentleman of that name stayed here last night, and left this afternoon. Apostrophe, apostrophe, will you find out his address? Apostrophe, apostrophe, now the lady's maid had already been quick-witted enough to find out that, and indeed all about him. But it chanced that a fashionable illustrated weekly paper had just been sent from the booksellers, and being in want of a little time to look it over before it reached her mistress's hands, Mrs. Menlove retired, as if to go and ask the question, to stand meanwhile under the gas lamp in the passage, inspecting the fascinating engravings. But as time will not wait for tired women, a natural length of absence soon elapsed, and she returned again and said, his address is, Upper Street, Sandburn. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thank you, that will do, apostrophe replied her mistress. The hour grew later, and that dreamy period came round when ladies' fancies, that have lain shut up close as their fans during the day, begin to assert themselves anew. At this time a good guess at Ethelberta's thoughts might have been made from her manner of passing the minutes away. Instead of reading, entering notes in her diary, or doing any ordinary thing, she walked to and fro, curled her pretty nether lip within her pretty upper one a great many times, made a cradle of her locked fingers, and paused with fixed eyes, where the walls of the room set limits upon her walk, to look at nothing but a picture within her mind. 2. Christopher's house, Sandburn Town, Sandburn Moor. During the wet autumn of the same year, the postman passed one morning as usual into a plain street that ran through the less fashionable portion of Sandburn, a modern coast town and watering place not many miles from the ancient Anglebury. He knocked at the door of a flat-faced brick house, and it was opened by a slight, thoughtful young man, with his hat on, just then coming out. The postman put into his hands a book packet, addressed, Christopher Julian Esquire apostrophe apostrophe. Christopher took the package upstairs, opened it with curiosity, and discovered within a green volume of poems, by an anonymous writer, the title page bearing the inscription, Meters by E apostrophe apostrophe. The book was new, though it was cut, and it appeared to have been looked into. The young man, after turning it over and wondering where it came from, laid it on the table, and went his way, being in haste to fulfill his engagements for the day. In the evening, on returning home from his occupations, he sat himself down cozily to read the newly arrived volume. The winds of this uncertain season were snarling in the chimneys, and drops of rain spat themselves into the fire, revealing plainly that the young man's room was not far enough from the top of the house to admit of a twist in the flue, and revealing darkly a little more, if that social rule of three inverse, the higher in lodgings the lower in pocket, were applicable here. However, the aspect of the room, though homely, was cheerful, a somewhat contradictory group of furniture suggesting that the collection consisted of waifs and strays from a former home, the grimy faces of the old articles exercising a curious and subduing effect on the bright faces of the new. An oval mirror of Rococo workmanship, and a heavy cabinet piano with a cornice like that of an Egyptian temple, adjoined the harmonium of yesterday, and a harp that was almost as new. Printed music of the last century, and manuscript music of the previous evening, lay there in such quantity as to endanger the tidiness of a retreat which was indeed only saved from a chronic state of litter by a pair of hands that sometimes played, with the lightness of breezes, about the sewing machine standing in a remote corner, if any corner could be called remote in a room so small. Firelights and shades from the shaking flames struck in a butterfly flutter on the under parts of the mantel shelf, and upon the reader's cheek as he sat. Presently, and all at once, a much greater intentness pervaded his face. He turned back again, and read anew the subject that had arrested his eyes. He was a man whose countenance varied with his mood, though it kept somewhat in the rear of that mood. He looked sad when he felt almost serene, and only serene when he felt quite cheerful. It is a habit people acquire who have had repressing experiences. A faint smile and flush now lightened his face, and jumping up he opened the door and exclaimed, "Faith, will you come here for a moment?" A prompt step was heard on the stairs, and the young person addressed as Faith entered the room. She was small in figure, and bore less in the form of her features than in their shades, when changing from expression to expression the evidence that she was his sister. "Faith, I want your opinion. But, stop, read this first." He laid his finger upon a page in the book, and placed it in her hand. The girl drew from her pocket a little green leather sheath, worn at the edges to whitey brown, and out of that a pair of spectacles, unconsciously looking round the room for a moment as she did so, as if to ensure that no stranger saw her in the act of using them. Here a weakness was uncovered at once. It was a small, pretty, and natural one. Indeed, as weaknesses go in the great world, it might almost have been called a commendable trait. She then began to read, without sitting down. These meters by composed a collection of soft and marvelously musical rhymes, of a nature known as the vers d'associate. The lines presented a series of playful defenses of the supposed strategy of womankind in fascination, courtship, and marriage, the whole teeming with ideas bright as mirrors, and just as unsubstantial, yet forming a brilliant argument to justify the ways of girls to men. The pervading characteristic of the mass was the means of forcing into notice, by strangeness of contrast, the single mournful poem that the book contained. It was placed at the very end, and under the title of Cancelled Words, formed a whimsical and rather affecting love lament, somewhat in the tone of many of Sir Thomas Wyatt's poems. This was the piece which had arrested Christopher's attention, and had been pointed out by him to his sister Faith. "It is very touching," she said, looking up. "What do you think I suspect about it, that the poem is addressed to me? Do you remember, when father was alive, and we were at Silencia that season, about a governess who came there with a Sir Ralph Peterwin and his wife, people with a sickly little daughter and a grown-up son? I never saw any of them. I think I remember your knowing something about a young man of that name." Yes, that was the family. Well, the governess there was a very attractive woman, and somehow or other I got more interested in her than I ought to have done. This is necessary to the history, and we used to meet in romantic places, and that kind of thing, you know. The end of it was, she jilted me, and married the son. Apostrophe, you were anxious to get away from Silencia. Apostrophe, was I? Then that was chiefly the reason. Well, I decided to think no more of her, and I was helped to do it by the troubles that came upon us shortly afterwards. It is a blessed arrangement that one does not feel a sentimental grief at all when additional grief comes in the shape of practical misfortune. However, on the first afternoon of the little holiday I took for my walking tour last summer, I came to Anglebury, and stayed about the neighborhood for a day or two, to see what it was like, thinking we might settle there, if this place failed us. The next evening I left, and walked across the heath to Flychet, that's a village about 5 miles further on, so as to be that distance on my way for next morning. And while I was crossing the heath there I met this very woman. We talked a little, because we couldn't help it, you may imagine the kind of talk it was, and parted as coolly as we had met. Now this strange book comes to me, and I have a strong conviction that she is the writer of it, for that poem sketches a similar scene or rather suggests it, and the tone generally seems the kind of thing she would write, not that she was a sad woman either. She seems to be a warm-hearted, impulsive woman, to judge from these tender verses. People who print very warm words have sometimes very cold manners. I wonder if it is really her writing, and if she has sent it to me. Would it not be a singular thing for a married woman to do? Though of course she removed her spectacles, as if they hindered her from thinking, and hid them under the timepiece till she should go on reading. Of course poets have morals and manners of their own, and custom is no argument with them. I am sure I would not have sent it to a man for the world. I do not see any absolute harm in her sending it. Perhaps she thinks that, since it is all over, we may as well die friends. If I were her husband I should have doubts about the dying. And all over may not be so plain to other people as it is to you. Perhaps not. And when a man checks all a woman's finer sentiments towards him by marrying her, it is only natural that it should find a vent somewhere. However, she probably does not know of my downfall since father's death. I hardly think she would have cared to do it had she known that.
I am assuming that it is Ethelberta Mrs. Peterwin who sends it. Of course I am not sure.
We must remember that when I knew her, I was a gentleman at ease, who had not the least notion that I should have to work for a living, and not only so, but should have first to invent a profession, to work at out of my old tastes. Kit, you have made two mistakes in your thoughts of that lady. Even though I don't know her, I can show you that. Now I'll tell you, the first is in thinking that a married lady would send the book with that poem in it without at any rate a slight doubt as to its propriety. The second is in supposing that, had she wished to do it, she would have given the thing up because of our misfortunes. With a true woman the second reason would have had no effect had she once got over the first. I'm a woman, and that's why I know. Christopher said nothing, and turned over the poems. He lived by teaching music, and, in comparison with starving, thrived, though the wealthy might possibly have said that in comparison with thriving he starved. During this night he hummed airs in bed, thought he would do for the ballad of the fair poetess what other musicians had done for the ballads of other fair poetesses, and dreamed that she smiled on him as her prototype Sappho smiled on Fan. The next morning, before starting on his rounds, a new circumstance induced him to direct his steps to the bookseller's and ask a question. He had found on examining the wrapper of the volume that it was posted in his own town.
No copy of the book has been sold by me, apostrophe the bookseller's voice replied from far up the alpine height of the shop ladder, where he stood dusting stale volumes, as was his habit of a morning before customers came. I have never heard of it, probably never shall, apostrophe and he shook out the duster, so as to hit the delicate mean between stifling Christopher, and not stifling him. Surely you don't live by your shop? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Christopher, drawing back. The bookseller's eyes rested on the speakers. His face changed. He came down, and placed his hand on the lapel of Christopher's coat. Sir, apostrophe, he said, country bookselling is a miserable, impoverishing, exasperating thing in these days. Can you understand the rest? Apostrophe, I can. I forgive a starving man anything, apostrophe said Christopher. You go a long way very suddenly, apostrophe said the bookseller. Half as much pity would have seemed better. However, wait a moment. Apostrophe he looked into a list of new books, and added. The work you allude to was only published last week, though, mind you, if it had been published last century I might not have sold a copy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, although his time was precious, Christopher had now become so interested in the circumstance that the unseen sender was somebody breathing his own atmosphere, possibly the very writer herself, the book being too new to be known, that he again passed through the blue shadow of the spire which stretched across the street today, and went towards the post office, animated by a bright intention to ask the postmaster if he knew the handwriting in which the packet was addressed. Now the postmaster was an acquaintance of Christopher's, but, as regarded putting that question to him, there was a difficulty. Everything turned upon whether the postmaster at the moment of asking would be in his under-government manner, or in the manner with which mere nature had endowed him. In the latter case his reply would be all that could be wished. In the former, a man who had sunk in society might as well put his tongue into a mousetrap as make an inquiry so obviously outside the pale of legality as was this. So he postponed his business for the present, and refrained from entering till he passed by after dinner, when pleasant malt liquor, of that capacity for cheering which is expressed by four large letter X marching in a row, had refilled the globular trunk of the postmaster, and neutralized some of the effects of officiality. The time was well chosen, but the inquiry threatened to prove fruitless. The postmaster had never, to his knowledge, seen the writing before. Christopher was turning away, when a clerk in the background looked up, and stated that some young lady had brought a packet with such an address upon it into the office 2 days earlier to get it stamped. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.